Yeah! Welcome to the Compass Podcast, featuring Chris Chandro and the Compass team. We hope this message is just for you.
Well, I'm glad you guys are here. We have just two more weeks left in the Follow series. Next week is our last week. We're going to wrap it up. If you have missed any of it, basically, we have been in the middle of a series entitled Follow, where we have decided we want to dig in to what it really means to be a follower of Jesus. Not what it means to be a Christian, not what it means to be a believer, not what it means to just even be religious. We want to know, what does it mean to actually follow Jesus? And so if you've missed any of the last several weeks, I would encourage you to go to our website. You can listen to all of those at compassbn.com/follow or just compassbn.com, and you can follow links to check those out there. You will not be disappointed. If you check those out, you can catch up with us, and you can, if you like today, you can go, okay, today made more sense because I was able to go back and follow Chris's random stream of consciousness thought. So make sure you do that if you have not been with us. You will be glad that you did. But today we're going to talk about something that is a little bit different, maybe a little less spiritual. Last week we talked about a little more spiritual. We talked about kind of the cost of following Jesus and what that looks like and what that is. And today we want to maybe go a little more practical, not in a bad way, but just in a way that I think that the Bible, the New Testament, would want us to take something out of is from the life of Jesus and how to follow him. And so to do that, I want to ask you guys a question. How many of you guys, just by a show of hands, how many of you guys had ever had a bad boss? Some of you guys are like, my boss is in this room. I cannot raise my hand. Yeah, okay. Most of the people in here raised their hand. A bad boss, a bad coach, a bad teacher. Some of you guys in here are like, you know what? I never worked a day in my life. I'm a college student and I'm poor. But I know what it's like to have a bad professor because I've been down that road. We've all had some sort of like a bad leadership. And check this out. There's some interesting statistics on bad bosses. And when I'm talking about bad bosses, like here's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the boss who demands productivity or any of that. I'm talking about that boss where like the best days at the office are the days where he's sick or she's on vacation and not around, and you can go and be like, oh, okay, I don't have to feel sick to my stomach today because they're not in. Like, I'm talking bad bosses. Check this out. There's a study done on bad bosses, a nationwide survey, and they interviewed a bunch of employees, thousands and thousands of people who work for companies, to talk about their bosses, and some crazy numbers. So check this out. 3 out of 4 employees report that their boss is the worst and most stressful part of their job. Not even bad, the worst and most stressful part of their job. For those people who have had a bad boss and who have maybe gotten out of that and gone into a different working environment, like they talk about like the stress and anxiety, how there's like these health consequences to it. And in talking to these people, they determined that on average, it takes 22 months for a person to get over the effects, both physical and mental, of having a bad boss. Almost 2 years to get over the effects of having a bad boss. Workers with bad bosses are 30% more likely to have coronary disease. So if you got a bad boss, you may want to get a treadmill and think about that. One recent report estimates this, that the effect of bad bosses on the economy, because it also points out that employees will call in sick more often if they have a bad boss, that they won't work as hard, they won't give their best because a bad boss creates that environment. And it's estimated that the effect of bad bosses on our economy is to the tune of $360 billion a year. I mean, that's like the GDP of some countries, and bad bosses are losing that much money out of our economy. And this last statistic is just the craziest to me. Some of you are going to relate to this, though. 65% say that they would rather have a new boss than a pay raise. 65% of people say, I would rather not get any more money if you just get rid of that guy so that I can have a better working environment. That's crazy. You couldn't pay me enough to want to stay and work for this person. And today we want to talk about something that is incredibly practical, but I think that it's going to have implications that a lot of us are going to want to hear. In fact, I would be willing to bet this. At the end of this message, some of you guys are going to wish that your boss was hearing this message. Some of you guys at the end of this are going to be emailing your boss the link to our website so that they can listen to this or find a subtle way, be like, oh yeah, church was awesome this Sunday. I don't know, just the message. Gosh, I mean, it just changed my life. I wouldn't really know how to summarize that for you, but you should listen. You know, here's the website. Check this out. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Please listen to that. But that's okay, because everybody needs Jesus. But leadership is not something that we talk about a lot in church. And I think for a couple reasons. I mean, one of those is that leadership is very practical. It doesn't sound very spiritual. It doesn't sound like, you know, how does leadership affect my relationship with God? It's not really a religious term. And I think another reason that we don't talk about leadership very much is kind of the way that we look at Jesus and the way that we see him. You know, we see Jesus as, you know, this kind of frail, you know, dude with, you know, 80s, you know, feathered bangs. And, you know, he's the guy whose disciples got to help him into the boat so that he doesn't get his, you know, perfect white dress stained or wet. You know, that's like the Jesus that a lot of us imagine, right? This is frail, fragile. Hi, guys, I'm Jesus. You know, let me teach you. You know, that's, some of us see Jesus that way. And the really, who wants to follow that Jesus? Who wants to follow that guy? Would you? I don't want to follow a guy like that. And so with Jesus portrayed like this, why would you think about leadership? But Jesus, I mean, think about this. Jesus, he had a ministry that lasted 3 years. It started at age 30, and he died at age 33. So he had a ministry that lasted 3 years. He had a handful of full-time employees. He had no website or social media, and yet somehow Jesus changed the world. Jesus was someone worth following. People followed and wanted to follow Jesus. He was, I mean, the man was a leader. When I turned 33, I remember when I turned 33, I was like, wow, this is the year that Jesus died. And I looked at my own life and I was like, oh my gosh, I kind of suck because I have not accomplished anything with my life. This is it for me. I've got nothing more to offer. But that, I mean, in that short window of time, Jesus transformed the world. And he was able to do that because Jesus was someone worth following. Jesus was a leader. And because Jesus was a leader, and if we're going to follow Jesus and we're going to be people who understand what it means to be followers of Jesus, we want to understand what it means to be a leader like Jesus. And so I want to talk about this today. Hold on with me, because maybe some of you are checking out, you're a little skeptical. You are hoping for something really mystical and like spiritual and that you would feel tingles and goosebumps. I hope that happens, but it probably won't, because we're just getting practical. But bear with me. You will not be disappointed, because this is something that is really important for all of us to understand as followers of Jesus. So what we're going to do is we're going to pick up right after where we left off from last week. Now, again, just to recap last week, you know, Jesus was talking to his disciples. They were hanging out, and this dude comes up and he says, Jesus, what do I have to do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus's basic response was, okay, are you following all the religious rules of, you know, churchiness? And the guy's like, yes, awesome, I am. I'm gonna inherit eternal life. And Jesus said, great, I'm glad you did all that. Now sell everything you own, give it to the poor, and then come follow me. So Jesus talked about the cost of following him is a willingness to leave everything behind for the sake of following him. But we also talked about how what you gain from following Jesus is way greater than anything that you could sacrifice. And so Jesus, he walks through this. The disciples all see this. They were there to see this exchange. And even after this exchange happens, they're talking to Jesus and they're like, wow. One of them says, how in the world could anyone be saved if this is what's required of just letting go of everything? And Jesus looks at him. He's like, dude, listen, with God, everything is possible. I know it sounds humanly impossible that anyone would be willing to do that in order to follow me, but I'm telling you, with God, this is doable, and it's a life worth living. Following Jesus is the best life that you can possibly live. And so that happens, and Jesus and the disciples begin walking to the next place, and the people around Jesus, they're kind of astounded, and the Bible even describes in the book of Mark, which Mark was a guy who hung out with Peter, and Peter was one of the main disciples of Jesus who witnessed firsthand what was happening in his life. And so Peter told Mark what happened, and Mark wrote it into a book. And Mark says that as they were leaving this encounter, that some of the people were astounded, and some of the people were really afraid. Now, if I saw Jesus tell someone that he needed to sell everything he owned and give it to the poor, I would be a little afraid too, because I don't want to sell everything that I own and give it to the poor. So I'd be keeping a little bit of distance from Jesus and hoping that, you know, let's not make eye contact so you don't talk to me directly. But they're walking down the street to a new town in this environment where everyone's just kind of astounded at what Jesus is talking about and really who Jesus declared he is. And so Jesus takes this moment. He recognizes that there's an atmosphere here where he can speak something really, really powerful, really spiritual, and really meaningful into his disciples' lives. And so as they're walking, Jesus begins talking to the disciples. And in Mark chapter 10, verse 33, it says this, that Jesus talking to the disciples says, listen, we're going up to Jerusalem where the Son of Man will be betrayed to the leading priests and the teachers of religious law. Son of Man was a term that referred to the Jewish Messiah, and Jesus used it to refer to himself. So basically he's saying this, he's saying, listen, we're going to Jerusalem, and I'm going to be betrayed to the religious leaders and the teachers of law and the leading priests. And they will sentence Jesus to die. They'll hand him over to the Romans. They will mock him, spit on him, flog him with a whip, and kill him. But after 3 days, He will rise again. So Jesus, he's talked about the cost of following him. And he's like, okay, guys, listen, between you and me, I want you to know something. This is what's going to happen. We're going to go to Jerusalem. And the religious leaders, they're going to arrest me. They're going to beat me. They're going to kill me. But I want you to know this. After 3 days, I will rise from the dead again. Now, just a side note. One of the most compelling arguments to become a follower of Jesus is that if a guy can tell you that he's going to die and he can tell you that he's also going to be raised from the dead and then he actually does those things, that he might be someone that's worth listening to. And that's what Jesus does in this moment. He literally lays everything out for the disciples. And you would think in a moment like this, you'd think that they'd be like, what? Jesus, what is this? Hold on a sec. Hold on. Rewind. Take us back one step. What did you say? You're going to die? That doesn't make sense. You're our new king. You're the Jewish Messiah. You're going to come and you're going to reign over Israel, right? And Jesus tells him this. And this is crazy. This is what happens after Jesus lays all this out in Mark chapter 10, 35. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, who were two of Jesus' disciples, they came over and spoke to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do us a favor. So Jesus, he's just getting real, right? He's breaking it down. He says, guys, look, I'm going to die. I'm going to get beaten. I'm going to get tortured. And they're going to kill me. And the disciples are like, wow, Jesus, that's powerful. But hey, you know what? Can I ask you for a favor, Jesus? And so I'm sure Jesus is like, oh, you idiots. But he entertains them and he lets them continue. He's like, okay, sure, guys. Tell me what it is that you want to know. And they say this in Mark 10, 36 through 37. What is your request? He asked. And so they replied, when you sit on your glorious throne, we want to sit in places of honor next to you, one on your right and the other on your left. So Jesus says, I'm going to die. It's over for me. It's curtains. And they're like, wow, Jesus, that's really interesting. But hey, can you do us a favor? When you are sitting on your beautiful, glorious throne, when you come into power, will you do us a favor? Will you let us sit on your right and on your left? So here, let me explain kind of what they're talking about. The disciples and really everyone who followed Jesus, they were looking for a Jewish Messiah. Now, what the Jewish Messiah was supposed to be is he was going to be this guy who came in and he was going to cast out the Romans who were occupying Israel. And the Jewish Messiah was going to restore the kingdom of Israel. So he was going to ascend to the throne of Israel. And Israel is now going to be, again, a world power. And they're going to be a dominant force in the world. And everyone's going to look to Israel as this nation that is powerful and rules. And the Messiah is going to rule with an iron fist. And he's just going to be this amazing king. And so when James and John are asking Jesus, when they say, when you come into your glorious throne, can we sit on your right and your left? They literally think that Jesus is going to have a throne somewhere in Jerusalem where he will rule as a physical king over the people. He's going to take care of an entire nation, and he is going to be an earthly, worldly king. And so what they're saying is this. They're saying, Jesus, look, you're going to be powerful, okay? Jesus, you're going to be the shot caller, right? You're going to call the shots. And really what we're asking is this, is that when you are the big shot caller, we just ask that maybe we could be, you know, little shot caller one and little shot caller two. You can just put us on the side. You can put us on your right and your left. And, you know, you just got the big power. And then for us, we'll just have itty bitty little power. And so that, you know, when people come up, we can kind of tell them what to do. We can, you know, toss our weight around. Well, your weight around, Jesus. We'll toss your weight around. But we want to sit on your right and on your left. James and John are literally thinking about how they're going to rule in the nation of Israel right then and right there. Jesus, we know you're the big time. We just want to be a little bit of the big time. And so here's what's funny. As this happens, like, the other disciples kind of see James and John over talking to Jesus. And Jesus, he's kind of talking them through this, and he's talking to them about their request that they've made. And maybe one or two of the other disciples, they kind of overheard this, and they come back to the other guys and like, dude, can you believe what those guys just asked? They just went up to Jesus and said, hey, we want to sit at your right and left. Well, that's junk. I deserve to sit on Jesus' right and or left. I prefer, preferably the right, because that's the cool side. But I mean, come on. Jesus likes me more. You know, I'm more handsome. I'm stronger. I'm bigger. You know, I'm more equipped to be Jesus' right hand. And they start going, oh, wait a minute, this is junk. How are they going to do that? Mark 10, 41, 42 says, when the 10 other disciples heard what James and John had asked, they were indignant. Those guys are ticked. Like, how dare they ask that? So Jesus, he kind of knows what's going on, because Jesus had this way of kind of knowing what people were thinking and know what they were talking about and knowing what's stirring inside their minds. And he calls them all together and he says, okay, guys, listen. He brings the disciples together and he says, you know that the rulers of this world lord it over their people, and officials flaunt their authority over those under them. So he says, okay, guys, gather around. We need to talk about something. He said, okay, you know how leadership works, right? This is how leadership works. You know, the leaders and the people in authority, you know, they grab that authority and then they lord it over the people who they lead, right? That's how leadership works. And all the disciples are like, well, yeah, Jesus, duh. That's why we want to have some. You know, we want to do that. You know, Jesus is describing what leadership and authority is like for us today too. I mean, isn't that what it is? Isn't leadership that thing that once you get it, you know, it's for you, it's for your benefit? Because we all start at the bottom, right? We're all, you know, those mailroom clerks at some point. And being a mailroom clerk stinks. You know, we've all had those crummy stink jobs that nobody wants to do, but you do them because you know this, I'm going to work my way up and I'm going to get a raise and I'm going to get this promotion. And the reason we want those things is we want that money. But man, when I get that spot, when I can be the leader, when I can be the boss, I'm going to sit at the top and I'm going to kick my feet back on my desk and I'm going to make big money and I'm going to save up to, you know, live on an island someday in the rest of my retirement, because at the end of the day, I'm going to hit that position. And when I'm in that position, everyone else is there for me, right? I mean, that's what leadership is. I get the authority, I get the position, and you who work for me work for me. You work for my benefit, you work for my good, and I send you out to do things that benefit me. And then, you know, maybe you have some people who work under you and you supervise them and lead them, and you think that they work for you because that's how leadership works, but the reality is they also work for me, so they benefit me, and that's leadership. And it was no different in Jesus' day. I mean, Jesus is talking to, you know, this militant Roman culture and where money flowed uphill. And, you know, you look at, for some of us, you could look at, you know, our economy and see, you know, how this is the exact same way in modern day leadership. I mean, I'm not big on bashing people for making money, but I mean, people talk about the disparity of like CEO income compared to like people in the mailroom. And it's like just the massive thing because money flows uphill. That's how leadership works. And it was no different in Jesus' day. And so the disciples are gathering around Jesus and Jesus says, you guys know how leadership works. It works like this. And they're all like, yeah, absolutely, Jesus. That's, we know it works that way. And we want a piece of that. You know, we paid our dues on the bottom. You know, we've walked with you through streets and from town to town. We've done the heavy lifting. And now we want a piece of some of that leadership. You know what I'm talking about? That's what they're asking for. So Jesus says, okay, that's how it works. And then he pauses and he looks at them and they're all looking with expectation because they're waiting for Jesus to probably line out who gets to sit where, who gets to do what, what's their, you know, hierarchy of leadership authority. And he says this, but among you, it will be different. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first among you must be the slave of everyone else. And so he says this and the disciples are like, okay, wait. Hold on a sec. Leadership is me getting what I want, and the people who work under me work for me, and everything rolls uphill. And what you're telling me is this. You're telling me is that, but that for us, it's different. For us, it's the opposite. You know, whoever wants to be first, which means whoever wants to lead, must be last. Whoever wants to be great, whoever wants authority, has to be the servant of everyone else. And then Jesus says this. He says, for even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others and to give his life as a ransom for many. Now, again, you know, those of us who are familiar with, you know, the New Testament and Jesus, you know, some of this stuff is stuff that we've heard a lot and, you know, maybe we've processed in our minds. And even those of us who aren't super familiar with the Bible or you know, Christianity or faith, maybe you're in here and this is like, you're just visiting with someone and that's okay. You know, but even then you kind of know like Jesus's reputation, you know what he was about. And you would say, well, yeah, Jesus, he was this humble servant. But very rarely is there a real connect between how Jesus lived and how Jesus acted and how we live and how we act. And you can even see that in the disciples. I mean, these guys walked with Jesus. They witnessed how Jesus interacted with people and in the world. They saw Jesus being a servant. You know, Jesus said himself, for even the Son of Man, even me, I came to be a servant. I came to serve. And yet the people who follow Jesus the closest, they completely miss the point because they're looking for that. They're looking for that hot seat. They're looking for the big chair where they can call shots. But Jesus says, no, not with you. That's not how it goes. Not with you. You see, a Jesus leader, and this is how Jesus lived, and this is what Jesus is trying to explain to his disciples. A Jesus leader is someone who leverages his authority for the good of those who are under his authority. A Jesus leader is someone who uses his position, who leverages his authority for the good of the people who are under that authority. A Jesus boss is someone who works for the best interests of the people who he leads. And yet, when you look at our society and you look at our culture, and even if you look within the church, sometimes we don't see that, do we? I mean, I think it can be increasingly more rare for us to see a person who says, you know what, I want to lead like Jesus and I want to serve like Jesus. But this is the voice of a man when Jesus says this. This is the voice of the man who had more influence on human history than anyone else throughout all time. You know, if you were to pick this up and read it in a book, you'd be like, well, it doesn't make any sense. That's not how the world works. But Jesus transformed and changed the world. And he said, no, this is how it's supposed to be. Because the main thrust that Jesus is trying to get across to us as followers of his when it comes to how we lead and how we are leaders, if we're bosses, if we're parents, is that godly leadership always says you first. Godly leadership always says, I'm going to put you first. My needs, my desires, my wants are always going to go second. And so there's all sorts of leadership books that people, you know, write. One of those books is Good to Great. I don't know if anybody's ever read Good to Great. It kind of is the textbook on modern day leadership. And it's interesting. One of the things he writes about level 5 leadership. And he's talking about leaders who are the most effective in these really great companies. And there's certain characteristics that make a great leader. And the main thing that makes a great leader, the one quality that is consistent across the board, it's not charisma, which is what a lot of us would think. It's not charisma. It's not, you know, just a keen intelligence or insight. It's not even just a great gut or instinct. The one consistent factor across great leaders in great companies, and this is not spiritual leadership, I'm talking like real world leadership, is humility. It's humility. It's a person who says, I am going to put you over me. I'm going to put the benefit of our organization over mine. I'm going to put the interests of my people and my organization before my own interests. That's real world. But as followers of Jesus, I know that's real world. That's Jesus. I mean, that's how Jesus led. That's how Jesus lived. And now here's the thing. For some of us, it's easy to kind of check this out because, you know, we're not a boss. But man, here's one thing I want to make sure that you get. And this is why it's important for us to talk about leadership. Okay. Is that you may not be a boss in a company. You may not be some, you know, head honcho. You may not be leading people specifically in that way. But leadership doesn't just happen in a business world. We are all in some way leaders or will be in some way leaders. You know, you are a leader in your marriage. You know, you are a leader in your home, in your family. You are a leader to your children. You know, the way you raise them, the way you teach them, the way you bring them up, you are a leader in your house. You're a leader in your home. You set the tone for how they follow. You know, you may be a leader at school. You may be a leader at your job. There's always going to be a place in our lives, particularly as we are followers of Jesus, where we will be in leadership roles. And you know how I know this? Here's how I know this. Jesus was a leader. And if we follow Jesus, we will follow Jesus into leadership. If you are a follower of Jesus, some way, somehow, you will be following Jesus into some form of leadership. It could be family leadership. It could be corporate leadership. It could be educational leadership. Man, you may work at Compass. You may serve in our kids area or in our nursery area. You may serve with our kids. You know, you could be leading that our children, our next generation of leaders, you are leading them. Following Jesus. Jesus was a leader. It means this, you're following Jesus into a form of leadership. And it's so important to him that we understand what it means to live like him and to lead like him, that he reiterates this over and over. In fact, one of the times that Jesus reiterates this is at the Last Supper. This is the last time Jesus is with his disciples. It's the last time he can pour into their lives. It's the last time he can invest in them. And this is what he does. He goes in and he sits them all down and he gets this bucket of water and a rag and he starts going to each one of them and he starts washing their feet. Now here's the thing. Back then, I mean, dude, these guys walked around in sandals. They walked around on dirt roads. There was no pavement. There were donkeys and horses and camels that walked around on those streets. So they're not just walking in dirt. They're walking around in who? And so, you know, they walk into somebody's house, and what would happen is a servant, or maybe the homeowner, if they didn't have servants, would wash people's feet to be a good host, and they would take off their sandals, clean their feet, and then they would come in. But a person with authority, a person who was a leader, would never, ever do that. That was something that the least of the least did. That's something that slaves did. That's something that servants did. And yet at the Last Supper, Jesus calls his disciples into the room, and he starts washing their feet. It's amazing. Some of the disciples are like, whoa, 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 Jesus, don't do this. This is too degrading. This is not for you. There's slaves to do this. Or, you know, or there's like Thaddeus over there. He's one of the disciples. Nobody even knows who that dude is. He's just kind of with us. Let him wash feet, you know. He's kind of at the bottom rung of the disciple ladder. Make him do it. But Jesus says this. This is amazing in John 13, 12. Jesus, he washed their feet. He says, you can't be my follower unless you let me wash your feet. And he explains why in John 13. He says, after washing their feet, he put on his robe again and sat down and asked, do you understand what I was doing? I want to make sure you get this. Why did I do this, guys? I want you to follow me. He says, you call me teacher and Lord, and you're right. I am your teacher and Lord. I do have authority. I am your leader. Because that's what I am. And since I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you ought to wash each other's feet. I have given you an example to follow. So do as I have done to you. Jesus knows that following him is following into a life of leadership at some form. And he sets out a template. He sets out the guide for us how we lead. And we follow Jesus into leadership by saying, you first. You first with my kids. Hey man, I got kids. It's easy to like make your kids your slaves, right? You know what I'm talking about? Hey, will you guys grab the remote for me? It's 4 feet away, and I'm guilty of that. And then my kids will come in. My son Calvin, he loves milk. He's just kind of a milkaholic, and so he's always, Dad, can you get me a glass of milk? And I'm like, Calvin, you're like 4 feet tall. You can get your own glass of stinking milk. Go get it. And hey, while you're in there, will you grab me like a glass of water? Thanks, son. I appreciate it. Or, you know, we'll do these things like, hey, do you guys want some ice cream? Yeah, that'd be awesome. Great. Scoop me some too while you're in there. That would be great. It's easy to treat our kids like servants and slaves because, you know, God gave them to us. But man, listen, as you lead your family, as you lead your children, do you look at them as an asset that God gave you to make your life better? Do you look at them as a tool for you to use to make things easier for you? Or do you say, you know what, I'm going to leverage everything that I have for the benefit of my kids? Maybe for our kids it's easy. Maybe some of us are bosses and you're in a work environment where you supervise people. I've been in a work environment where I supervise people, and not here because everyone I supervise here is awesome. They're just the best. And I've been in environments where I supervise people and I'm like, If human resources would let me slap that dude in the back of the head, I would do it. You know what I mean? And there's people that we lead, and there's people who we want to get the best performance out of, and we want to see them achieve and accomplish things. And the fact of the matter is we want to see them achieve and accomplish things because I want to get my bonus. And if you don't do your job, I'm not going to get my bonus. But Jesus' leadership, godly leadership, says you first. It says, you know what? I'm going to put your needs ahead of my needs. It flips the leadership template upside down on its head, and it says, that's not how it is. We put others first. Jesus' leadership is you first. Man, in your marriage, this is such a huge thing. Like, if married couples could grasp this, like, I mean, this single principle, I think, could solve much of the divorce problem in the world. If married couples, not even followers of Jesus, could just get this principle. This is what New Testament marriage is. This is what Christian marriage is. It's this. It's, hey, you know what? I love you. So, you know, I'm going to put your needs first. I'm like, no. You first. No, seriously, you go first. No, you. Here, you should do this. No, seriously, I think you should have this because I want to put you first. And then all of a sudden, there's like this situation where the husband and the wife are just constantly putting each other first. And when you constantly put someone else first, you're lifting them up and you're elevating them, and they're lifting you up and elevating you. And then it's just like, well, where's the tension? Because godly leadership is you first leadership. It's putting other people first. And yet so many of us in this room have experienced specific instances of painful, hurtful, bad leadership. And in the church too. I mean, some of you guys have been burned in church environments. And I'll tell you, I have been burned in a church environment. our first ministry job that we ever did, we walked into our first ministry position, and I was the worship pastor, and I was so bright-eyed, and I was just like, this is going to be great, and I'm going to walk into this, and it's just going to be like I'm walking on clouds, and angels are just going to be lifting up my every step, and everything's just going to be perfect and smooth, and we'll never have a problem again. That was like seriously what I thought, and I thought, you know, if we do face conflict, if we do face challenges, you know, it will be maybe people in our church who don't quite get what we're trying to do, and they're pushing against maybe some of the really modern stuff we're trying to accomplish. But you know what? As a church staff, as a church leadership team, we'll pull together and we'll get each other's backs, and it's going to be just awesome, and we're going to take on the world. And everything that happened was the exact opposite of what we expected. You see, our boss, who is the pastor of the church, he was not as advertised. He was not what we expected. And what I was really looking forward to was someone who would just champion us and be behind us, supporting us, a Jesus leader. And what we got was a little bit of an alpha male who wanted credit. He wanted the glory. He wanted recognition. And it expressed itself in a lot of different ways. You know, I remember there was one time specifically where I just had a lot on my plate. I had a lot on my portfolio that I needed to do. And some of you guys can totally relate to that. And, you know, here's something that leaders say. They're like, you know what? Let me know if there's too much. And we'll, you know, we want to make sure that we don't burn you out, right? You've heard that. And so I went into his office and I said, hey, I need to talk to you about something real quick. I'm doing worship. I'm working with the teenagers, with the students, and I'm doing all of our website stuff. I'm doing all of our graphic design. I'm doing all of this stuff. And I feel like there's just too much on my plate. And I feel like that I'm not good at anything right now, that everything's just kind of average. And if there's any way that we could, you know, get someone else to do all the design stuff, I think that would help. If I could just pull myself out of doing all of this graphic design stuff, I really think that would help, because I am at the point of getting burnt out and I feel like I've just got too much. So I laid all this out, right? And what would you expect in that situation? I expected him to be like, wow, you know what? I didn't realize you had so much. You know what? Let's try to figure this out. You know, let's navigate through this because I want you to be healthy and well. That's what I was totally expecting. And when I finished, there's a few moments of just kind of silence. And he looked at me and his face was getting kind of red. And he said this. He looked at me and his finger came out like this. And he said, listen, he said, you don't tell me when you have too much to do. I tell you when you have too much to do. And then he stopped. And I didn't know how to respond to that. I was totally taken aback. I completely expected something different. And I just said, you know what? Yep. Okay. You're right. I'll figure it out. I'll make it happen. And he, red-faced and angry, he walked out of my room and he shut the door. Not my bedroom, my office. He wasn't like in my house. So he didn't like tuck me in at night. That's weird. But that was just one example of kind of the leadership that we were under. And there was all sorts of other situations and circumstances that came after that that we were just, man, we were beaten down. I would come home from work and my stomach would hurt. I would just feel sick. I would go into the office and I would just cross my fingers that I could just close the door and that maybe, you know, I would go into the office early so that maybe we wouldn't have to cross paths, because I never knew what was going to happen. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know how he was going to come down. And it was so tense. Terry and I would be driving in the car on a day off and all of a sudden my heart would just start racing and I would just start breathing heavy. And I was like, and I just like, anxiety or panic attack. I didn't know what it was, but I was just under so much stress and so much tension and so much pressure because I was sitting under a leader who wasn't leading like Jesus. And here I was, I mean, we were in ministry. We were professional Christians. And still, even in an environment where there's professional Christians, being a Jesus leader is something that we miss and we overlook. But can I tell you the consequences of not leading like Jesus to the people who are following you, whether they're your kids, whether it's your spouse, whether they're your friends, whether they're your classmates, whether they're your employees, the consequences of not leading like Jesus are painful and they're brutal. And here's the other reality. It's not just the consequences. I mean, think about this. What would the world be like if we all led like Jesus? I mean, if we all led like Jesus, think about how things would change. Here, the reality is this. Every single person who is looking for a job should want to work for a follower of Jesus. Because they should know that they are the best bosses in the world. They're the bosses who care about their employees, that coach their employees, that take care of them the best. Everyone should, they could hate church, they could hate the Bible, but they should want to work for a follower of Jesus because we lead like Jesus. Every company should want to hire Christians to work at their company because they know that Christians are going to be the best possible employees because they lead like Jesus. You know, people in the world, they should be looking to the church for how to have good marriages and how to raise our kids, because as they look at us, they see us leading like Jesus. And you know what? They may not want anything to do with the Bible, but when they look at how our children are raised and when they look at the outcome of how our children are brought up, there's something different. And that difference is this, is that we lead our children the way Jesus led, in a way that says, you first. What's your best interest? How can I help you? How can I put you first? As true and wholly committed followers of Jesus, we should be the best bosses in the world. We should be those people who are leveraging our authority for the good of those who are under our authority. And all of that is possible in our lives, all of it. I mean, we can be the best parents, we can be the best husbands and wives if we just say this, you know what? Just like Jesus, I'm gonna wash feet. I'm going to wash feet when nobody thinks I should. I'm going to wash feet when someone else should be doing it because they have less authority or because they're in a worse position. You know what? I'm going to get a glass of milk for my kid, even though I'm perfectly comfortable on this couch and my butt imprint is fully settled in and I'm watching this show. I'm going to do that. You know why? Because my kid is going to someday look at his kids and look at his wife and he's going to say, you know what? I'll get you a glass of milk because my dad did it. And you know why my dad did it? Because my dad followed Jesus. That's the influence. That's the power. You see, following Jesus as a leader means that we lead like Jesus. And as we lead like Jesus, we follow Jesus and people follow us. And maybe they don't even know it, but they're following Jesus too. And that's the influence and that's the power of following him and leading like Jesus in this world. As we lead like him, the world is going to be changed and transformed into the image of what he wants to do. And so the question as we wrap up for you today is this. Is that, am I leading my employees the way that Jesus would? Do I function and operate in my workplace the way that Jesus would? Or do I look at my position as a way to leverage what I want, to get what I want, to get my next promotion, to get my bonus? And I don't care if they're burnt out, they need to get that done because I need something for me. Do I lead my family? Do I lead my wife? Do I lead my kids by saying, you know what, you first. You first. Do I lead at school with the students around me or on my team? Do I lead in such a way where people are looking to me knowing that I am there for them the way that Jesus is there for us? Or are they looking at me knowing that I want the glory, I want the shot? Throw me the ball because it's about me. How am I living my life? Am I leading like Jesus? Am I living like Jesus? Because ultimately the question is this, am I following Jesus? Because if you're following Jesus, you'll lead the way Jesus led. Let me pray for you. Dear Heavenly Father, I thank you for your word. And I thank you, God, that sometimes there's just these practical messages that speak to things that maybe we don't think are incredibly spiritual, but Jesus, are completely relevant to how you want us to live a life of following you. And Jesus, we can acknowledge and admit the fact that you were probably the greatest leader who's ever lived. And Father, this morning, we want nothing more than to be like you. As your disciples, as your followers, we want to be remade in the image of Christ. And so whatever that means for us, God, we want it. So Jesus, I pray that just as you taught the disciples over and over again, just as you told them, if you want to be first, you've got to put yourself in the position of being last. If you want to be the greatest, you have to position yourself as the least. If you want to be the leader, if you want to be the boss, if you want to be in charge, then you have to position yourself to where you're washing the feet of those who you are in authority. Jesus, my prayer is this, that you would lock that message, that you would lock that desire into our hearts. And whatever environment that you are leading us to lead in, whether it's a corporate environment or a home environment or a school environment, or God, even a church environment, people who are leading here at Compass in this church. God, I pray for each and every single one of us that you would help us to put ourselves last, that you would help us to make ourselves the least, that you'd help us to lead like Jesus. God, we submit ourselves to you. We want nothing more than a life that you designed for us to live. And we know that comes when we follow you with all that we have and with all that we are. And God, we pray all of this in your matchless holy name. Amen.
Thank you for joining us at Compass. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you have any questions about Compass or this message, contact us at our website, www.compassbn.com.